executed a perfect arcing slash. Her weight shifted to her legs just as she flipped the blade, leading with the hilt, and brought up her arm against an invisible blow. Another shift, and the sword swept down, a brutal slash that would have sliced an opponent in half. Each slice was perfect, like that eight-pointed star was stamped on her very heart. The sword was an extension of her arm, a part of her as much as her hair or breath. Every movement bloomed with purpose and precision. In the moonlight, before the silvered lake, she was the most beautiful thing he'd ever seen. Nesta finished the eighth maneuver and returned the sword to center. The light in her eyes shone brighter than the moon overhead, such light and clarity that he could only whisper, "Again." With a soft smile that Cassian had never seen before, standing on the moon-washed shores of the lake, Nesta began. Part 3. Valkyrie. Chapter 51. "So you mean to tell me," Emery muttered from the side of her mouth as they stood in the training ring 2 days later, "that you got into a fight with your family, disappeared for a week with Cassian, and came back able to use an actual sword. But I'm supposed to believe you when you say nothing happened." Gwyn snickered, her attention fixed on tying a length of white silk ribbon to a wood beam jutting from the side of the pit. Neither the ribbon nor the beam had been there a week ago, and Nesta had no idea how they'd even anchored the wood to the stone, but there it was. The crisp morning wind ruffled Nesta's hair. "That's exactly what I'm telling you." "Tell me you at least had a week's worth of sex," Emery muttered. Nesta choked on a laugh as Cassian stiffened across the ring, but he didn't turn. "There might have been some." After that night beside the lake, she and Cassian had lingered there for 2 entire days, either training with his sword or fucking like animals on the shore, in the water, bent over a boulder as she moaned his name so loudly it echoed off the peaks around them. He'd taken her over and over, and she'd clawed at him and torn his skin every time, as if she could climb into him and fuse their souls. They'd returned last night, and she'd been too tired to venture to his room. She assumed he'd been called to the river house, because he hadn't been at dinner, nor had he sought her out. She wasn't ready to see Feyre, though. For all she'd confessed to Cassian, that step, she'd face it soon. "Done," Gwyn declared, the white ribbon fluttering in the wind where it hung from the beam. Behind them, a few of the priestesses working with Azrael had turned to see what the ribbon business was about. The Shadow Singer crossed his arms, angling his head, but remained on his half of the ring. Cassian, however, approached Gwyn's handiwork and ran the white silk between 2 fingers. Nesta couldn't stop her blush. He'd done that by the lake. After he'd fucked her with his fingers, he'd held her gaze while he rubbed them together, testing the slide of her wetness against his skin the same way he was touching that ribbon. From the way his hazel eyes darkened, she knew he was recalling the same. But Cassian cleared his throat. "Explain," he ordered Gwyn. Gwyn squared her shoulders. "This is the Valkyrie test for whether your training is complete and you're ready for battle. Cut the ribbon in half." Emery snorted. "What?" But Cassian made a contemplative noise, gesturing to the other half of the ring. "Az told me you also started preliminary work with the steel blades while we were gone." He nodded to Gwyn and Emery, the former glancing toward Azrael, who watched in silence. "So, show me what you learned. Cut the ribbon in two."
"We slice the ribbon in two?"
Emery asked Gwyn warily. "And Our training is complete? Gwyn glanced to Asriel, who drifted closer. She said, I'm not entirely sure. Cassian released the ribbon. A warrior's training is never complete, but if you're able to slice this ribbon in two with one cut, then I'd say you can hold your own against most enemies, even if you've only been training for a little while. At their silence, he looked between them. Who's first? Again, the three of them swapped glances. Nesta frowned. Whoever went first would get the brunt of the humiliation. Gwyn shook her head. No way in hell. Emery's mouth popped open. Why me? She demanded. What? Cassian asked, and Nesta realized they hadn't been speaking. You're oldest, Gwyn said, nudging Emery toward the ribbon. Emery groused but stepped up to the dangling ribbon, grudgingly taking the sword Cassian extended. Asriel murmured over a shoulder to the priestesses under his charge as they watched. They instantly began moving again, but Asriel's attention remained on the ribbon. Should we bet? Gwyn asked Nesta. Shut up, Emery hissed, though amusement lit her eyes. Nesta smirked. Go ahead, Emery. Cursing under her breath, wings tucking in tight, Emery lifted the blade in near-perfect form and sliced at the ribbon. The white silk fluttered and bent around the blade, and absolutely did not slice in two. Let's all admit we knew that would happen, Emery said, teeth bared as she slashed the sword again. The ribbon danced harmlessly away. Cassian clapped her shoulder. Looks like I'll see you at training tomorrow. Asshole, Nesta muttered. Cassian laughed and took the sword from Emery, and, in the same breath, spun, swiping low and even. The bottom half of the ribbon fluttered to the ground, a perfect slice. He grinned. At least I can cut the ribbon. Nesta didn't forget that parting shot, not as they finished training for the day, and certainly not when she dragged Cassian down the stairs, straight to his bedroom, need bellowing in her veins. Cassian apparently felt the same, as he'd scarcely spoken these few minutes, his eyes blazing bright. They only made it as far as his desk against the wall before she'd grabbed him, right as he'd pushed her down onto the wooden surface and stripped off her pants. Bent over the desk, her bottom half entirely exposed, Nesta ground her aching nipples into the wood surface, savoring the brutal crush. Her jacket, her shirt, her boots, all stayed on. In fact, her pants were only pushed down to her ankles, restricting her movement further, leaving her utterly at his mercy. And his cock at last sank deep into her. The two of them groaned. He stood behind her, one hand braced on the desk, the other clenching her hip as he pulled out nearly to the tip, then pushed back in slowly. Nesta writhed. I could fuck you for days, he said, against her sweaty neck. She moaned into a pile of papers. I'm fucking soaked with you, he growled, and the hand at her hip slid around to tease the apex of her thighs. At the first taunting stroke, she breathed, Cassian. He pounded into her at a steady, deep pace. The liquid slide of his cock into her sounded obscenely through his otherwise silent bedroom. His balls brushed against her, tickling her with each powerful thrust. Harder! She wanted him imprinted on her very bones. Harder! Fuck! He exploded on a breath and pulled back from where he'd braced himself. Hold on to the desk, he ordered, and Nesta stretched to grip the edges just as his hands landed on her hips. His thighs pushed into her own, spreading her further, as wide as she could go, and he gave no warning before his hands tightened and he unleashed himself. Exquisite, punishing thrusts slammed so deep he hit her innermost wall, and her eyes rolled back into her head at the sheer bliss of it. He became savage, unrelenting. She might have been sobbing at the pleasure, the sheer size of him, so large there would never be any getting used to it. Every unrelenting push had her inching against the desk, the wood and papers teasing her breasts, and she nearly wept at that, too. Cassian's fingers dug into her hips so hard, Nesta knew she'd bruise, loved that she'd bruise. He shifted his stance, and his cock plunged even deeper, rubbing against that spot, and the sounds that came from her weren't human or fae, but something far more primal. "Fuck yes," he snarled at her abandon. "That's it, Nesta." He accentuated each word with a savage thrust. "Do I feel good to you?" She whimpered her confirmation, then managed to say, "I like it when you ride me hard. Every time I move and my body is sore." She had to fight for words, for control. "I think of you, of your cock." "Good. I want my cock to be the only thing you think about." His pace faltered as he licked up the column of her neck. She could hear the taunting smile in his words as he whispered, "Because your pretty little cunt is the only thing I think about." At the words, his foul language, her toes curled. But she wouldn't let him win this one. Not when this had somehow become a competition for who could make the other come first. So she whispered, "I love being so covered in your seed that it leaks out of me for ages afterward. I love feeling it slide down my thighs and knowing you left your mark in me." "Fuck," he blew out, his pounding wild now, so unchecked, only her hold on the desk kept her feet on the ground. "Fuck." Cassian came with a roar, and at the first pulse of his cock spurting deep into her, she climaxed, screaming loud enough that he clamped a hand over her mouth. She bit down on his fingers, and he kept moving in her, spilling himself over and over until his seed was again running down her thighs, until he slid his fingers through a stream of it and brought it up to that spot at the apex of her sex. "You have no idea what you just started," he whispered in her ear, smearing his wetness there, rubbing into her sensitive flesh with idle circles. Nesta didn't reply as his fingers flicked against her, and she came again. Nesta didn't venture down to the city to see Feyre or Amran, but she kept going to the stairs. She hadn't been able to reach the bottom again. Part of her knew that if she wanted to, she might accomplish it, just as she might open her mouth and ask Cassian to take her to the river house. But she didn't. So she kept trying the stairs for another week straight, always getting about halfway down before turning back, her legs absolute jelly by the time she returned to the hallway. It was fitting, given that her arms were jelly too. Yes, she wielded the sword with her entire body, but her arms hurt most of all, and it didn't help that they'd started on shields now. No one had managed to slice Gwyn's ribbon in two. They all tried at the start of each and every lesson, and all failed. Nesta had begun to resent the sight of a ribbon anywhere, tying back Rosalind's red hair, folded in the accessory drawer of her dressing table, even bound for placekeeping into the latest romance Emery had loaned her. They all laughed at her, taunted her. So Nesta ran the steps and practiced and failed. She took Cassian to her bed every night and sometimes during the day, though they never slept in each other's rooms, not once. They fucked, they savaged each other, and then they parted. No matter that there were some nights when she wanted him to stay, wanted to roll off him and snuggle into his warmth and fall asleep to the sound of his breathing. But he always left before she mustered the courage to ask. Nesta was leafing through a tome of military history in the library that had one paragraph on Valkyrie ambush strategies when Gwyn appeared. "Tell me you found their secret to cutting the ribbon."
"You and that ribbon," Nesta muttered, shutting the tome.
Of all of them, Gwyn had become the most relentless about succeeding. Gwyn crossed her arms, pale robes rustling. She winced and rubbed her shoulder. "Did you know shields weighed so much? I certainly didn't. No wonder the Valkyries learned to use them as weapons as deadly as their swords." She sighed. "They'd have been quite a sight in battle, cracking open enemy skulls with blows from their shields, throwing them to knock an opponent onto their backs before skewering them." She rubbed her shoulder again. "Their arm muscles must have been hard as steel."
Nesta snorted. "Indeed."
She cocked her head. "Now that you're here, I want to ask a favor." Gwyn arched a brow. "About the trove?"
"No."
Nesta knew she had to scry, soon, for the harp. She'd lost a good week in the mountains, and if Queen Briallen already had the crown, time was not on their side. But she said, "You mentioned a while ago that you have evening services, with music, right?" Gwyn smiled.
"Oh, yes. You want to join us? I promise it's not all religious stuff. I mean, it is, but it's beautiful. And the cave we have the service in is beautiful, too. It was carved by the underground river that flows beneath the mountain. So the walls are smooth as glass. And it's acoustically perfect. The shape and size of the space amplifies and clarifies each voice within."
"It sounds heavenly," Nesta admitted.
"It is."
Gwyn smiled again, eyes lighting with pride.
"Some of the songs you'll hear are so ancient they predate the written word. Some of them are so old we didn't even have them in Sangreva. Clotho found them in books shelved below level 7. Hannah, she'll be the one who plays the lute, figured out how to read the music."
"I'll be there." Nesta shifted on her feet. "I think I need something like that." At Gwyn's quizzical look, Nesta said, She fumbled for the smoothest way to say it. Gwyn slid her hands into the robe's pockets, her face open, waiting. Nesta finally said, letting herself voice the words,
"After the war, I was in a bad place. I still am, I suppose. But for more than a year after the war,"
she couldn't look Gwyn in the eye,
"I did a lot of things I regret. Hurt people I regret harming. And I hurt myself. I drank day and night, and I..." She didn't want to say the word to Gwyn, fucked, so she said, "I took strangers to my bed, to punish myself, to drown myself." She shrugged a shoulder. "It's a long story and not one worth telling, but through it all, I picked taverns and pleasure halls to frequent because of the music. I've always loved music."
She braced herself for the damning judgment, but only sorrow filled Gwyn's face.
"You've probably guessed that my residency in the house, my training, my work in the library, is my sister's attempt to help me. Her sister, whom she had still not apologized to, whom she still didn't have the courage to face. And I think I might be glad Feyre did this for me. The drinking, the males, I don't miss any of it. But the music, that I miss. Nesta waved a hand, as if she could banish the vulnerability she'd offered up. But she went on. And since I'm not particularly welcome in the city, I was hoping you meant it when you said I could come to one of your services, just so I can hear some music again. Gwyn's eyes shone like the sunlight on a warm sea. Nesta's heart thundered, waiting for her reply, but Gwyn said, "Your story is worth telling, you know." Nesta began to object, but Gwyn insisted, "It is. But yes, if you want music, then come to the services. We will be glad to have you. I will be glad to have you." Until Gwyn learned how horrible she'd been. "No," Gwyn said, apparently reading the thought on her face. She grabbed Nesta's hand. I understand. Nesta heard Gwyn's own heart begin thundering. "I understand," Gwyn repeated, "what it is to fail the people who mean the most, to live in fear of people finding out. I dread you and Emery learning my history. I know that once you do, you'll never look at me the same again." Gwyn squeezed Nesta's hand. Her story would come later. Nesta let her see it in her face that when Gwyn was ready, nothing she could reveal would make her walk away. "Come to the service this evening," Gwyn said. "Listen to the music." She squeezed her hand again. "You'll always be welcome to join me, Nesta." Nesta hadn't realized how badly she'd needed to hear it. She squeezed Gwyn's hand back. Chapter 52. The wooden pews that filled the massive red-stoned cavern were packed with pale-hooded figures, their blue gems glimmering in the torchlight, as they waited for the sunset service to begin. Nesta claimed a spot on a pew in the rear, earning a few curious looks from the hooded females who filed past. But no one spoke to her. A dais lay at the far end of the space, though no altar sat upon it. A natural stone pillar rose from the ground, the top flattened into something like a podium. Nothing else. No effigies or idols. No gilded furniture. A silver-haired figure stalked down the aisle, a cold wind at her heels, and the others gave her a wide berth. Nesta stiffened as Meryl's twilight-colored eyes settled upon her and narrowed with recognition and hatred. But the female kept moving, taking her place atop the dais where Clotho had appeared. Still no Gwyn. The last of the priestesses found whatever seat was available, and silence fell as a group of 7 females stepped onto the dais beside Meryl and Clotho. Some were hooded, others were bareheaded, and one of those bareheaded priestesses, Gwyn. Her eyes glowed with mischief and delight as they found Nesta's, as if to say, "Surprise!" Nesta couldn't help but smile back. A bell rang 7 times somewhere nearby, echoing through the stones, through Nesta's feet. Each peal was a summons, a call to focus. Everyone rose at the 7th peal. Nesta gazed at the sea of pale robes and blue stones as the entire room seemed to suck in a breath. As that 7th bell finished pealing, music erupted, not from any instruments, but from all around. As if they were one voice, the priestesses began to sing, a wave of sparkling sound. Nesta could only gape at the lovely melody, the voices from the front of the cavern leading it, lifting higher than the others. Gwyn sang, chin high, a faint glow seeming to radiate from her. The music was pure, ancient, by turns whispering and bold, one moment like a tendril of mist, the next like a gilded ray of light. It finished, and Merrill spoke about the mother and the cauldron, and the land, and sun, and water. She spoke of blessings and dreams and hope, of mercy and love and growth. Nesta half heard it, waiting for the sound, the perfect, beautiful sound, to begin again. Gwyn seemed to be shimmering with pride and contentedness. Merrill finished the prayer, and the group began another song. It was like a braid, the song, a plait of seven voices weaving in and out, individual strands that together formed a pattern. Halfway through it, a drum appeared in the hand of the singer on the far left. A harp began strumming in the hands of the one on the far right. A lute sounded from the center. She'd never heard such music. Like a spell, a dream given form. The entire room sang, each voice resonating through the stone. But Gwyn's voice rose above them all, clear and powerful, and yet husky on some notes. A mezzo-soprano. The word floated from the depths of Nesta's memory, voiced by a watery-eyed music tutor who'd quickly declared Nesta hopeless at singing or playing, but in possession of an unusually fine ear. The song ended, and more players and words flowed from Merrill, Clotho silent beside her. Then another song started, this one merrier, faster than the other, as if the songs were a progression. This one was a lilting chant, the words tumbling over each other like water dancing down a mountainside, and Nesta's foot tapped on the ground in time to the beat. Nesta could have sworn that beneath the hem of Gwyn's robe, the priestess's foot was doing the same. The words and the counter-melodies danced around and around until the walls hummed with the music, until the stone seemed to be singing it back. They finished and started another song, led into it by a rolling drum beat, then a single voice. Then the harp joined, a second voice with it, then the lute along with a third. The three sang around and into each other, another braid of voices and melodies. They reached the second verse, and the other four joined in, the room with them. Gwyn's voice soared like a bird through the cavern as she started the third song with a solo, and Nesta closed her eyes, leaning into the music, shutting out one sense in order to luxuriate in the sound of her friend. Something beckoned in Gwyn's song, in a way the others hadn't, like Gwyn was calling only to her. Her voice full of sunshine and joy and unshakable determination. Nesta had never heard a voice like Gwyn's, by turns trained and wild, as if there was so much sound fighting to break free of Gwyn that she couldn't quite contain it all. As if the sound needed to be loose in the world. The others joined Gwyn for the second verse, and the harp's harmonies rose above their song, archways of wordless notes. With her eyes closed, only the music mattered. The song, the voices, the harp, it wrapped around her as if she'd been dropped into a bottomless pool of sound. Gwyn's voice rose again, holding such a high note, it was like a ray of pure light, piercing and summoning. Two other voices rolled in to join, pulsing around that repeated high note, the harp still strumming, voices whispering and flowing, lulling Nesta down, down, down into a pure, ancient place where no outside world existed, no time, nothing but the music in her bones, the stones at her feet, her side, overhead, The music took form behind Nesta's eyes as the priestesses sang lyrics in languages so old, no one voiced them anymore. She saw what the song spoke of: mossy earth and golden sun, clear rivers, and the deep shadows of an ancient forest. The harp strummed, and mountains rolled ahead, as if a veil had been cleared with the stroke of those strings, and she was flying toward it, toward a massive, mist-veiled mountain, the land barren save for moss and stones, and a gray, stormy sea around it. The mountain itself held two peaks at its very top, and the stones jutting from its sides were carved in strange, ancient symbols, as old as the song itself. Nesta's body melted away, her bones and the stones of the cavern a distant memory, as she flowed into the mountain, beheld towering carved gates, and passed through them into a darkness so complete it was primordial. Darkness that was full of living things. Terrible things. A path led into the dark, and she followed it, past doors with no handles, sealed forever. She felt horrors lurk behind those doors, one horror greater than the others, a being of mist and hatred. But the song led her past them all, invisible and unmarked. This place was utterly lethal, a place of suffering and rage and death. Her very soul quaked to wander its halls. And even though she had passed by the door keeping her safe from that one being more horrible than all the rest, she knew it watched her. She refused to look back, to acknowledge it. So Nesta drifted down and down, the harp and the voices pulsing and guiding, until she stopped before a rock. She laid a hand on it to find it was only an illusion, and she passed through it, down another long hall, beneath the mountain itself. And then she stood in a cavern, almost the twin to the one the priestesses sang in, as if they were linked in song and dreaming. But rather than red stone, it was carved of black rock. Symbols had been etched into the smooth floor, into the curving walls, rising toward a ceiling so high it faded into gloom. Spells and wards pulsed around the room, but there in the center of the space, set upon the floor as if it had been laid there by someone who'd merely walked away and forgotten it, there, in the center of the chamber, sat a small, golden harp. Cold leached through Nesta, clarifying her thoughts enough to realize where she stood, that the music of the priestesses had lulled her into a trance, that her own bones and the stone of the mountain surrounding her had been her scrying tools, and she had drifted to this place. The harp gleamed in the darkness, as if it possessed its own sun within the metal and strings. "Play me," it seemed to whisper. "Let me sing again. Join your voice with mine." Her hand reached toward the strings. "Yes." The harp sighed, a low purr rolling off it as Nesta's hand neared. "We shall open doors and pathways. We shall move through space and eons together. Our music will free us of earthly rules and borders." Yes. She'd play the harp, and there would be nothing but music until the stars died out. "Play. I have so long wished to play, it said, and she could have sworn she heard a smile within the sound. What might my song unlock in here? A cold, humorless laugh skittered along Nesta's bones. It sang again, play, play. The song halted, and the vision shattered. Nesta's knees gave out as the room swept in, and she collapsed onto the pew, earning an alarmed look from Gwyn through the crowd. Her heart thundered. Her mouth was dry as sand, and she forced herself to rise to her feet again, to listen to the end of the service as she pieced it all together, realized what she had discovered in her unwitting scrying.
You're sure of this? Cassian leaned a hip against Reese's desk. Nesta said the harp is beneath the prison. She's never been to the prison, Reese said, frowning.
Cassian had honestly thought Nesta might be drunk when she'd burst into the dining room an hour earlier, breathless, and told him her wild story. He'd hardly been able to follow what she'd said, except for the fact that she believed the harp was at the prison. Worse, that she'd woken up the harp in the prison. What havoc might it wreak unchecked? The thought chilled Cassian to the core. So he'd flown down here and found Reese in his study, again poring over old healer's volumes, trying to find some way to save his mate. Reese leaned back against his seat, considered. Az had winnowed to a meeting point on the eastern coast to get a report from Moore about the Valahan situation, and Feyre was out to dinner with Amron, so it was just the two of them tonight. Cassian had suggested that Nesta come tell Reese herself, but she'd refused. She'd been shaken, had needed some time to pull herself back together. He'd check in on her later, make sure she hadn't withdrawn too far into her head. Reese drummed his fingers on his biceps, stared at his desk for a long moment. When we heard about Baron's treachery, I had Helion show me how to apply a shield like the one I had used around Feyre to the prison itself.
You guessed this would happen?
No. A muscle ticked in Reese's jaw. Feyre and I were concerned that Baron would try to free the inmates to use in a conflict, just as we used the bone carver in the war. Give me tonight, and I'll get the shield untangled and open for you tomorrow.
It takes that long to undo a shield?
Reese dragged a hand through his hair, worries etched deep lines into his brow.
It's a combination of magic and spell work, so yes. And I'll admit I'm distracted enough these days that I might need some extra time to make sure it's done correctly.
Cassian's stomach bottomed out at the bleakness in Reese's face, but he only said, "All right." A blade appeared on the desk, summoned from wherever Reese kept it. The great sword Nesta had made.
Take it with you,
his High Lord said quietly.
I want to see what happens if Nesta uses it.
A visit to the prison isn't the time for one of your experiments, Cassian countered. The stars in Reese's eyes winked out.
Then let's hope she doesn't need to draw it.
Chapter 53. Rhysand really gave this sword to me of his own free will? Nesta asked Cassian the next morning as they hiked the mossy, rock-strewn side of the towering mountain known as the prison. It was exactly as she'd pictured it in her trance, and even more horrible in person. The very land seemed abandoned, like something great had once existed here and then vanished. Like the land still waited for it to return.
Reese said if we're going into the prison, we should be well armed, Cassian said,
his dark hair tossed by the cold, wet wind off the thrashing gray sea beyond the plain to their right.
And this is the best place he can think of for us to try out the sword you made.
So if it goes badly, at least it will kill me, not anyone else. Nesta couldn't keep the sharpness from her tone.
Reese had winnowed them here, depositing them at the base of the mountain, as no magic could pierce its heavy wards. Nesta hadn't been able to look him in the eye. You're not going to be killed, either by that blade or anything in there. His jaw tightened as he surveyed the towering gates far above. He'd put many of the current inmates inside, and Nesta had heard Feyre's harrowing tales of visiting the prison on several occasions. Little frightened her sister. That Feyre found it to be petrifying didn't help the twisting sensation in Nesta's gut.
You remember the rules?
Cassian asked, as they neared the gates of bone, intricately carved with every manner of creature. Yes. Hold Cassian's hand the entire time. Don't speak of Amran. Don't speak of anything regarding the trove or the court or Feyre's pregnancy. Don't speak of the creatures he'd put in here. Don't do anything except walk and stay on high alert. And get that harp out before it could unleash chaos. The bone gates groaned open. Cassian tensed, but kept climbing upward.
Looks like we're expected.
Down into the darkness, into hell itself, they walked. Nesta clutched Cassian's hand, her rope to life in this lightless place. One of Cassian's siphons flared with red light, bloodying the black walls, the doors they sometimes passed. Cassian moved with the fluidity of a trained warrior, but she noted his gaze darting around the path they walked, which plunged into the earth. The entrance to the hidden hall she'd seen in her scrying had been far, far below, between an iron door with a single rune upon it and a little alcove in the stone. Soft noises whispered through the rock. She could have sworn nails scraped behind one door. When she glanced at Cassian, his face paled. He noticed her stare and patted his left pectoral, right above the thick scar there, indication of who was imprisoned behind that door, who ran their nails over it. Her blood chilled. Blue anise. Cobalt skin and iron claws, he'd said. Anise savored eating her prey. Nesta swallowed, squeezing Cassian's hand, and they continued downward. Minutes or hours passed, she didn't know. In the gloom, the heavy, whispering air, time had ceased to matter. Nausea roiled through her. Amran had been in this place for thousands of years, thrown in by fools who had feared her in her true form, that being of flame and light who had laid waste to Highburn's army. Nesta couldn't imagine spending a day in this place, a year. She didn't know how Amran hadn't gone mad, how she'd found the strength to survive. She'd treated Amran badly. A small thought wedged into her mind. She had used her exactly as Amran said, as a shield against everyone. And Amran, who had survived millennia in this awful place, alongside the worst monsters in the land, Amran found her abhorrent. Misery burned like acid. Something pounded through the rock to their left, and Nesta flinched. Cassian squeezed her hand.
Ignore it,
he murmured. Down and down, into a place worse than hell. And then she spied an alcove burned into her memory, behind her eyelids. And yes, beside it was that iron door with the sole rune on its surface. Here. Nesta jerked her chin toward the bald stone. Through the rock. When Cassian didn't reply, she twisted to him. His focus lay fixed on the iron door. His golden brown skin had gone ashen. His lips mouthed the name of the being behind it. Lanthus.
You're sure?
Cassian swallowed.
You're sure this is the place?
Yes. Nessa didn't grant them time to reconsider as she outstretched her free hand and stepped up to the stone. Her fingers passed through the rock as if it didn't exist. Cassian yanked her back, but she pushed forward and her hand, then her wrist, then her arm vanished. And then they were through.
I had no idea there was anything else in the prison,
Cassian breathed as they continued down another hallway. No doors lined it, just smooth stone.
I thought there were only cells.
I told you, she answered. I saw a chamber here. The light of the siphon atop Cassian's hand revealed an archway and openness. And there it was. Raised symbols carved into the floor cast shadows against the crimson light. The entire round chamber was full of them, and in its center, the golden harp, covered in intricate embossing, set with silver strings. It didn't sing, didn't speak. It might as well have been an ordinary instrument, which was exactly why Nesta tugged Cassian into a halt beneath the archway, not daring to step onto the carved floor. We need to be careful. Nesta peered into the vast, empty chamber. There are wards and spells here.
Cassian rubbed his jaw with his free hand. My magic doesn't skew toward spells. I can blast apart magical shields and wards, but if it's a trap like Feyre and Amryn faced at the summer court, I can't sense it.
Nesta tapped her foot in a swift beat. Rhysand's wards on the mask couldn't keep me out. The mask wished for me to come, so it allowed me through. Maybe the harp will do the same. Like calls to like, as you all enjoy saying.
I'm not letting you go into that room alone. Not if that thing wants to play.
I don't think we have a choice. He squeezed her hand, calluses rubbing against her own.
You lead, I'll follow.
What if my presence would go unnoticed, but yours sets off a trap? We can't risk that. His throat bobbed.
I can't risk you.
The words slammed into her heart.
You can. You have to.
Before he could object, she said, you are training me to be a warrior. Yet you'd keep me from danger. How is that any better than a caged animal? The words must have struck something in him.
All right.
Cassian unbuckled the great sword he'd carried for her. He looped it around her middle, its weight considerable. She adjusted her balance.
We try it your way, and at the first sign of something wrong, we leave.
Fine. She swallowed the dryness in her mouth. His eyes glittered, noting her hesitation.
Not too late to change your mind.
Nesta bristled.
I'm not allowing anyone but us to get their hands on the harp.
With that, she stepped to the demarcation line between the hall and the chamber. Bracing herself, she pushed a foot forward. It was like stepping through mud. But the wards allowed her through. Nesta took another step, arm extended behind her to hold Cassian's hand. The pressure of the spells pushed against her calves, her hips, her body, squeezing her lungs.
These are like no wards I've felt before,
she whispered, standing still as she waited for any hint of a triggered trap.
They feel old, incredibly old.
They probably predate this place being used as a prison.
What was it before?
No one knows. It's always been here.
But this chamber?
He surveyed the space beyond her.
I didn't know places like this existed here. Maybe,
he frowned.
Part of me wonders if the prison was either built or stocked with its inmates to hide the harp's presence. There are so many terrible powers here, and the wards on the mountain itself. I wonder if someone hid the harp, knowing that it'd never be noticed with so much awful magic around it.
Her mouth had dried again.
But who put it here?
Your guess is as good as mine. Someone who existed before the High Lords ruled.
Rhys told me once that this island might have even been an Eighth Court.
You don't recognize these markings on the ground?
None at all.
She loosed a long breath. I don't think any traps were triggered. He nodded.
Be quick.
Their gazes held, and Nesta turned from the raw worry in his eyes as she pulled her hand from his and entered the chamber. The wards lay heavy against Nesta's skin, with each step across the stone floor to the shining harp.
It looks newly polished,
she observed to Cassian, who watched from the archway.
How is that possible?
It exists outside the bindings of time, just as the cauldron does.
Nesta studied the carvings in the floor. They all seemed to spiral toward one point.
I think these are stars, she breathed. Constellations.
And like a golden sun, the harp lay at the center of the system.
This is the Night Court,
Cassian said dryly. But it felt different from Night Court magic somehow. Nesta paused before the harp, the wards pressing into her skin as she surveyed its golden frame and silver strings. The harp sat atop a large rendering of an eight-pointed star. Its cardinal points stretched longer than the other four, with the harp situated directly in the heart of the star. The hair on the back of her neck stood. She could have sworn the blood in her body reversed course. She had the creeping feeling she'd been brought here, not by the cauldron or the mother or the harp, by something vaster, something that stretched into the stars carved all around them. Its cool, light hands guided her wrists as she picked up the harp. Her fingers brushed the icy metal. The harp hummed against her skin as if it still held its final note from the last time it had been used. Fay screamed, pounding on stone that hadn't been there a moment before, pleading for their children's sakes, begging to be let out. Let out. Let out. Nesta had the sensation of falling, tumbling through air and stars and time. It was a trap, and our people were too blind to see it. Eons and stars and darkness plunged around her. The Fae clawed at stone, tearing their nails on rock where there had once been a door. But the way back was now forever sealed, and they begged as they tried to pass their children through the solid wall. If only their children could be spared. Light flashed, blinding. When it cleared, she stood in a white-stoned palace. A great hall, where five thrones graced a dais. The sixth throne, in the center, was occupied by a pointy-eared crone. A golden spiked crown rested on her head, blazing like the hate in her black eyes. The fey crone stiffened, blue velvet robes shifting with the movement. Her eyes, clear despite her wrinkled face, sharpened, right on Nesta.
You have the harp,
the queen said, voice like crinkling paper. And Nesta knew who she stood frozen before, what crown lay on her thin white hair. Briallen's gnarled fingers curled on the arms of her throne, and her gaze narrowed. The queen smiled, revealing a mouth of half-rotted teeth. Nesta backed up a step, or tried to. She couldn't move. Briallen's horrible smile deepened, and she said conversationally,
My spies have told me who your friends are. The half-breed and the broken Illyrian. Such lovely girls.
Nesta's blood churned, and she knew her eyes were blazing with her power as she snarled, You come near them, and I'll rip out your heart. I will hunt you down and gut you. Briallen tutted.
Such bonds are foolish. As foolish as you still holding on to the harp, which sings answers to all my questions. I know where you are, Nesta Archeron.
Darkness erupted. Unmoving, solid darkness, slamming into Nesta as hard as a wall. Screams still echoed. No, no, that was a male bellowing her name. And she had not slammed into darkness. She'd collided with the stone, and now lay upon the floor, the harp in her hands.
Nesta!
Red light flared, washing like a bloody tide upon the stones, her face, the ceiling. But Cassian's siphons could not break through the wards. He could not reach her. Nesta clutched the harp to her chest, the last of its reverberations echoing through her. She had to let go. Somehow, in touching the harp while Briallen was wearing the crown, she had opened a pathway between their minds, their eyes. She could see Briallen, and Briallen could see her, could sense where she was. She had to let go. She couldn't do more than twitch her fingertips as invisible, oppressive weight bore into her, like it had flattened her into dust upon the ground.
Let go, she silently bade it, gritting her teeth, fingers brushing over the nearest string. Free me, you blasted thing.
A beautiful, haughty voice answered, full of music so lovely it broke her heart to hear it.
I do not appreciate your tone.
With that, the harp pushed into her harder, and Nesta roared silently. Her nails scraped over the string again. Let me go!
Shall I open a door for you, then? Release that which is caught?
Yes! Damn you, yes!
It has been a long while, sister, since I played. I shall need time to remember the right combinations.
Don't play games!
Nesta chilled at the word it had used. Sister, like she and this thing were one and the same.
The small strings are for games, light movement and leaping, but the longer, the final ones. Such deep wonders and horrors we could strum into being. Such great and monstrous magic I wrought with my last minstrel. Shall I show you?
No, just open up these wards.
As you wish. Pluck the first string, then.
Nesta didn't hesitate as her fingertip curled over the first string, grasping and then releasing it. A musical laugh filled her mind, but the weight lifted, vanished. Nesta heaved a breath, shoving upward, and found herself free to move as she wished. The harp lay still in her hands, dormant. The very air seemed lighter, looser, like opening another doorway had shut the one to Briallen.
Nesta!
Cassian thundered from across the chamber. I'm fine, she called out, shaking off her lingering tremors. But I think someone very wicked used this last. She stared into the darkness above. I think they used it to trap their enemies and their enemies' children into the stone itself. Was that what had been happening to her just now? The harp had been pushing her into the rock, fusing her soul with it? She shivered. Cassian demanded, are you hurt? What happened?
She groaned, rising slowly. No, I touched it and it held a memory, a bad one. One she'd never forget.
And we need to leave. It showed me Briallen wearing the crown. She saw me here.
The words tumbled out as Nesta waded back through the ward-heavy cavern, feeling that center spot, the star at its heart, like a physical presence at her back. Those vast, light hands seemed to pull at her, trying to make her return, but she ignored them, explaining to Cassian what she'd heard from the harp and what she'd seen in the vision with Briallen. Cassian's breathing remained uneven. He didn't relax one muscle until she stepped back into the tunnel hallway, until his hand was again around hers.
He didn't even bother to look at the harp or comment on Briallen. He only surveyed her for any sign of harm. It was as intimate as any look he'd ever given her. Even when he was buried deep inside her, moving in her, his gaze had never been so openly raw. She tucked the harp into her side and couldn't stop the hand she lifted to his cheek. "I'm fine." He pressed a kiss to the heart of her palm.
"I don't know why I doubted you."
He pulled from her touch.
"Let's get the hell out of here."
Dark promise laced the words, and she knew what they'd be doing as soon as they dumped the harp off to become Rhysand's problem. Her cheeks heated, something like pleasure going through her. That he would pick her, them, that he wanted the reassurance of her body that much. She interlaced her fingers through his, squeezing as tightly as their hands could be pressed together. He squeezed back and tugged her down the passageway, away from the sight of pain and long-forgotten memory. The sword bounced against her thigh, and she said, breaking the silence, "I named it Ataraxia." He glanced over his shoulder at her.
"That sword? What's it mean?"
"It's from the old language. I found it in a book the other day in the library. I liked the sound of it."
"Ataraxia,"
he said, as though he were trying out the weapon itself.
"I like it."
"I'm so glad you approve."
"It's better than Killer or Silver Majesty,"
he threw back. His grin was brighter than the glowing siphon atop his left hand. Her pulse raced.
"Ataraxia,"
he said again. And Nesta could have sworn the blade hanging from her belt hummed in answer, as if it liked the sound of his voice as much as she did. They neared the end of the tunnel, but Nesta paused him with a tug on his hand.
"What?"
he asked, scanning the cavern. But she rose onto her toes and kissed him lightly. He blinked with almost comic shock as she pulled away.
"What was that for?"
Nesta shrugged, her cheeks heating. "Gwyn and Emery are my friends," she said quietly. She tucked away her horror that Briallen had eyes on them. "But," she swallowed, "I think you might be too, Cassian." Cassian's silence was palpable, and she cursed herself for laying bare that wish, that realization. Wished she could wipe away the words, the stupidity.
"I've always been your friend, Nesta,"
he said hoarsely.
"Always."
She couldn't bear to see what was in his eyes. "I know." Cassian brushed his mouth over her temple, and they exited the tunnel at last, entering the main path of the prison, its heavy gloom. Nesta whispered, finally daring to say it. "And I've always..." Cassian threw her behind him so fast the rest of the words died in her throat.
"Run!"
His heartbeat, his pure terror, filled the air. "Nesta, run!" She whirled toward what he faced, his Illyrian blade gleaming ruby in the light of his siphon, as if a blade could do anything. The door to Lanthus's cell lay open. Chapter 54. Cassian beheld the open door to Lanthus's cell and knew two things. The first and most obvious was that he was about to die. The second was that he would do anything in the world to prevent Nesta from meeting the same fate. The second clarified his mind, cooled and sharpened his fear into another weapon. By the time the voice slithered from the darkness around them, he was ready.
"I wondered when you and I would meet again, Lord of Bastards."
Cassian had never, not once, forgotten the timbre and iciness of that voice, how it made his very blood bristle with hoarfrost. But Cassian answered,
"All these centuries in here, and you haven't invented a more creative name for me?"
Lanthus's laugh twined around them like a snake. Cassian gripped Nesta's hand, though his order to run still hung between them.
It was too late for running, at least for him. All that remained was buying her enough time to escape.
You thought yourself so clever with the ash mirror.
Lanthus seethed, voice echoing from all around them. The light of Cassian's left siphon revealed only red-washed, misty darkness.
Thought you could best me.
Another laugh.
I am immortal, boy. A true immortal, as you might never hope to be. 2 centuries in here is nothing. I knew I'd only need to bide my time before I found a way to escape.
You found a way, Cassian drawled to the mist that was Lanthus. It seems like someone helped you out. He clicked his tongue. He just had to wait. Wait until the attack came. Then Nesta could run. She was rigid beside him, utterly frozen. He nudged her with a foot, trying to kick her from her stupor. He needed her primed to run, not rooted to the spot like a deer.
The door opened of my will alone.
Lanthus purred.
Liar. Someone opened it for you.
Lanthus's mist thickened, rumbling with ire. Nesta swallowed audibly, and Cassian knew. When she'd ordered the harp to let her go, the harp had also released Lanthus. Just open up these wards, she'd instructed it. So it had. The wards on her and the wards nearby, on Lanthus's cell. It had said it wanted to play, and here it was, playing with their lives. What if the harp had extended its reach beyond Lanthus's door? If every single cell door here was open? Fuck. But Cassian said to the monster he feared above all others,
So, you plan to swirl around me like a rain cloud? What of that handsome form I saw in the mirror?
Is that what your companion prefers?
Lanthus whispered from too close, far too close. Nesta cringed away. Lanthus inhaled.
What are you?
A witch, she breathed, from Urid's dark heart.
There is a name I have not heard in a long while.
Lanthus's voice sounded mere feet from Nesta. Cassian gritted his teeth. He needed the monster gathered on the other side of her, so the path upward was clear. Had to draw Lanthus over toward him.
But you do not smell of Urid's heaviness. It's despair.
An inhale. Still behind them, blocking the way out.
Your scent. He sighed. A pity you've marred such a scent with Cassian's stink. I can barely distinguish anything on you besides his essence.
That alone, Cassian realized, kept Lanthus from realizing what she was, being interested as the bone carver had been, but it revealed another dangerous truth. Where to strike first?
What is it you are obscuring behind you?
Lanthus asked, and Nesta turned as if tracking him, keeping the harp hidden at her back. Lanthus chuckled, though.
Ah, I see it now. Long have I wondered who would come to claim it. I could hear its music, you know, its final note, like an echo in the stone. I was surprised to find it down here, hidden beneath the prison, after all that time.
The mist swirled and Lanthus drawled,
Such exquisite music it makes. What wonder it spins. Everything pays fealty to that harp. Seasons, kingdoms, the order of time and worlds, these are of no consequence to it. And its last string?
He laughed.
Even death bows to that string.
Nesta swallowed again. Cassian squeezed her hand tighter and said casually,
"You true immortals are all the same. Arrogant windbags who love to hear yourselves talk."
"And you fairies are all blind to your own selves,"
Lanthus crooned, circling again, and Cassian readied his blade.
"Based upon scent alone, I would say that you too are..."
Cassian released Nesta's hand and lunged forward, spearing his blade into the mist before Lanthus could say one more damning word. Lanthus screamed in rage as Cassian's siphons flared, and Cassian roared, "Run!" Before he struck again, Lanthus retreated, and Cassian used the breath to free the siphon from his left hand before chucking it to her, willing it to light. "Go!" he commanded as he tossed the stone to her. Red splashed across her fear-tight face as she caught his siphon, but Cassian was already pivoting to Lanthus. The crunching, fading steps told him Nesta obeyed. Good. Lanthus gathered in the darkness, a cobra readying to strike. Cassian just prayed Nesta made it out of the gates before he died. Nesta ran from the voice that was hate and cruelty and hunger entwined.